This is PFW in Progress.
They tell you all the time what to do, what to think, what to feel. Do you want to be like a chief? Like all those other people?
Do you want to work 8-10 hours? You own nothing? You got nothing? Do you know I eat octopus 3 times a day? How do you like that?
I'm a political prisoner, and I want my human right. Now, just like the president, give me cardi sense.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Why don't you try sticking your head up your ass? See if it fits.
Paul Perillo.
You're 50, you got a bag for a belly, they got hair on them, you got a liver, they got spots on it, and you're a junkie. Sleeps all day with them black shades on, wakes up with a quailu.
And Andy.
You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Andy Hart.
So say goodnight to the bad guy. Come on. The last time you're going to see a bad guy like this again, let me tell you.
Some guy named Tom.
Let's get this straight. All I have in this world is my balls and my word. And I don't break them for no one. You understand?
PFW in Progress.
You want to play rough? Okay.
Hello?
Say hello to my little friend.
And welcome. It's PFW in Progress time. Fred Kirsch, Paul Perillo, and Ryan Lowe is here from Patriots Video News, and that's because
8th string, right? PFW in Progress.
That's because Tom Casale and Andy Hart are on the way to Indianapolis to in-person cover the combine for us on Patriots.com and PFW. So that's exciting.
Huge.
So they'll be coming. They're on their way now. Right? What time's their flight? I know they're very worried. I know Tom was worried.
Oh, yeah. Tom's worried about the plane. I think they were leaving at like 3 or something like that. But they're on their way to the airport now.
So it's like a prop plane.
And it's not a direct flight, too. So he's got 2 opportunities to
work. Well, the ad in the paper for the airline said, take a chance, fly. And I think they're weighing their luggage on a bathroom scale, but I'm not sure.
It's one of those that they ask everybody what they weigh before they get on.
Right,
because they can't go over certain.
Tom will be on one side, Andy will be on the other side of the plane.
Tom's not a fan of flying in general, let alone on a prop plane and one of these, you know, non-charter. And
right.
He was a little, I think he was a little.
So they're on their way to the combine, and it's exciting because the NFL is now making the combine more and more accessible to the media. So there'll be a lot of stuff coming from them over the next few days. I think they're there till Tuesday. Is that right?
Well, it goes through Tuesday.
They're coming back Monday.
And so we'll have stuff from them, and plus the NFL Network is sending us a whole bunch of videos. So Patriots.com will be a happening place if you're into the
combine.
We're going
to have about 5 or 6 pages in the next issue of PFW devoted to the work for Tom and Andy at the combine. So
good stuff.
Video,
good stuff.
Print, website. Right. We'll have it covered in every angle.
This is no junket.
Podcast.
This is a work junket for them.
This is a work junket.
Although I am preparing for one night at least a bill from St. Elmo.
I was going to say the restaurant.
Well Andy said that. What do you think Fred would do if we just gave him like 5 straight nights of St. Elmo's? I go, what? What's this all from?
But what's the? They have the. What's their specialty that you always like? Oh, the shrimp.
Shrimp.
Right?
Yeah.
If he sends you, you know, if he comes home with an expense report with 5 nights of St. Elmo's, but he ships you a monthly supply of shrimp cocktail with that sauce, you'd be okay with that.
That might be okay. All right. Well, anyway, so they're out there. We're here, and we'll be here until 2 o'clock taking your emails, webradio@patriots.com. Phone number is 508-543-7482. And, again, that email address is webradio@patriots.com. The doctor is in the producing booth today.
The doc.
Gary's not in.
So Gary's in Hawaii.
Jason's
Hawaiian
here.
Drinks and hula skirts is keeping him busy.
Wow. Gary goes to Hawaii, what, once a month or something like that?
He claimed it was a wedding, but he left his girlfriend at home.
Left the girlfriend at home.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like a wedding / bachelor party all in one, because one of his buddies actually lives in Hawaii and is getting married.
Well, that's good. So Gary's out there. Jason's here. He'll be
I'm assuming
the
bachelor party is happening first, Brian.
Yeah. That's usually how it works.
Is that usually how it works now?
Yeah.
These days?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe where you're from, it's different.
No, Worcester. I think they still do the same in Worcester and Waltham, where I live.
Okay.
Worcester.
All right. So Patriots news. A couple reports that Tom Brady had his hernia surgery.
More than
last
reports.
Week.
I mean, he got it from the guy himself.
Yeah.
So.
And according to Tom Casale, who has had this surgery before, it's not a big deal.
I think that Brady kind of showed that it's not a big deal by playing golf several times since he's had the surgery.
Well, he clearly, I mean, this, you know, he's had several very public golf outings.
Appearances,
Golf appearances.
I thought one of them, though, was before the surgery.
Well, I think the
Pebble Beach Pro-Am, I think, was before, but the two subsequent ones, I think, have been after,
right? And I think, you know, considering the way everything is always buttoned up around here, Brady knows that any of these events, there's cameras on him. Obviously, he wouldn't be doing this if there were any problems related to this surgery. He wouldn't, A, play golf, B, play golf with cameras on him. So, I guess it's a pretty good sign that, not that there was much worry in the first place. No reason to worry.
Damn right, none of you want a doll.
Well, I'm going with Tom Casale's evaluation, so nothing to worry about there with Tom Brady. Other news, let's see, we're in the period now where teams have to designate their franchise and transition players.
Well, by tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time, you know, if they're going to designate anybody a franchise or a transition player, teams need to do so. They don't have to, obviously. Last year, there were 11 such players, and that was the highest total, according to Larry Wiseman, who's a former contributor to Patriots Football Weekly.
He is.
Didn't he used to?
Larry Wiseman.
What did I? That's what I said.
I thought you said Barry.
No, Larry.
A nasal issue there? Is that could that be?
Do I have a nasal issue?
Sounded a little bit like it. I don't know.
There's something going around, especially where we're. Around. That's making me allergic. Like right now, I'm fine, but up in my office, I can't breathe. There's something coming out of the vents or something. I don't know.
Maybe they're just trying to keep us down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like right now, I'm fine.
Fine.
But up, I go to my office.
I don't feel like I.
And I cleaned out. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Have you seen, my office. Have you seen the shelves? I clean all that out. And I
haven't seen
that. Crap.
No, I haven't seen that. Take a look.
So, I don't know. Maybe I stirred up too much dust, but that was
you
got to
keep
ago.
The dust. I think keeping the dust is really.
Yeah.
Anyway, 11 franchise players last year. That was the most since this system was implemented in 1993. So, we already had one yesterday. The Jets.
John Abraham.
Second in a row.
Used it on Abraham for the second year in a row. And this is where, I mean, I think that if you ask the players, they'll automatically tell you how they don't want to be a franchise player. But I think that you can kind of beat the system a little bit if you get lucky.
And
stay
Walter
healthy.
Walter Jones is a prime example.
Yeah, poster child of beating the system.
If you go two, three, 4 years, if you're at a position like offensive tackle, the franchise number is like 6-7 million. And each year, if you get tagged. A second year, you don't just get the average of the top five. You get 120% of your salary from the previous year. So,
so if you're able to stay healthy, now there's luck involved because obviously NFL players can go down at any time. Mm-hmm. But if you can be franchised multiple seasons, you're going to end up with more money than you would have if you got the long-term deal.
As long as you put some of it away and you're smart with it, you're in good shape.
You know, you think about John Abraham is going to get eight and change for 2 years in a row. Now, was he going to get $16 million in the first 2 years of a long-term deal? Right. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I doubt it. Right. Now, it's a huge risk. I mean, he could have gone down. He had knee problems a couple of years ago. He could have gone down and you know, had no earning power at all this year. But he stayed healthy, played all 16 games. Walter Jones, I think, did it 3 years in a row. Now, clearly, you're not going to get, you know, like Brian said, $6 or $7 million a year 3 years in a row. You're not going to do that. You know, with a signing bonus, how much of a signing bonus? And then you put yourself in a position where it's no longer cost-effective for the team to keep doing it for you. And I think Jones ended up getting like a $16 million signing bonus last year as a result. So on top of 3 years in a row of $6 or $7 million annual salary, then he gets the $16 million signing bonus. So he really beat the system.
He really did, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the season, this is the time of year where we have to really focus on contracts and free agency and franchise tags, and, of course, the collective bargaining agreement, which that's big news because that's being held up, and they're getting to that 11th hour now where it's, you know, almost time where they might either have to push up free agency or just decide that they're going to go into 2007 as an uncapped year. So it's crunch time, and the holdup, I guess, according to reports, is among the owners about what – revenue now that is unshared, can they put into being shared revenue? And
there's a pretty good split among the owners.
Yeah,
and it appears as if from reading some reports on Pro Football Talk, there's the Gang of Nine, he calls them, Mike Florio.
Yep.
There's nine guys right now that are prepared to wait this out.
And with nine guys, that's enough to block any vote that would change or, you know, whatever the existing collective bargaining agreement is. And if they can't change it, then they don't have anything to go to the Players Association with as, okay, here's how we're going to increase the cap. So the owners have to get their act together, and there's talk about suing if the league, you know, were to change or add, you know, unshared revenues into the shared pot. But again, if there is in fact nine teams, then they wouldn't have to sue because they could block it.
Right. It's purely a vote. I mean, they need the three quarters, I guess, is what it is.
Right.
I think it's eight. Is it eight?
It's eight. That's
the number?
The gang of nine is one over, is exactly what they need. They need nine.
Right.
Oh, okay. So eight wouldn't do it?
Actually, it's a good question if eight does it or not. I want to say no, because I think they were talking about they just needed that one.
Maybe eight would be the thing where then the Tagliabue would have to be like the vice president, where he would do the deciding vote. But with nine, you don't need it.
You can block it.
Yeah. So I don't know. But
and it's coming down to the wire, because it's not so much that the current CBA expires in the next week or so, but any decisions that are made regarding free agency and the amount of time that you can spread out a signing bonus, that is major ramifications on what every team is doing starting next week.
Yeah, just to clarify, eight would be not enough. It would
not
need
enough.
Nine.
Needs
24 yes votes would be required to impose something.
So, you know, and just to kind of, you know, it's complex, and there's been a lot of plans that have been put forth, you know, different proposals by different owners. And I guess none of them have been accepted. I think Lamar Hunt put forth, you know, a proposal, and the Rooneys did. And, you know, so there's been different ideas, but they can't settle on it. And, you know, it just gets down to there's some owners that are happy with the way things are. They have no debt. And, you know, they're fine. And they're not being aggressive in trying to make more within their own locale. There's other owners like the Patriots, the Cowboys, the Redskins, that, you know, have a lot of debt, are trying to build new stadiums or have new stadiums, and have really worked their, you know, local area to make more money.
And we should point out that the reports, you know, from the Washington Post, I think, is the paper that originally broke the story. The Patriots are among the nine teams now that are willing to wait this out. According to the report, it's the Redskins, Eagles, Cowboys, Giants, Jets, Panthers, Broncos, Patriots, and Texans. Those are the nine teams. Now, Fred, you had mentioned that you think that maybe the Jets don't belong there, and there might be...
Yeah, I heard that of those nine that you just mentioned, one isn't on the list, but there's an obvious team that isn't on the list that should be, and I'm thinking it's the Seahawks, but I'm not sure.
Right. You know? So that would clearly make sense with Paul Allen. And,
sure.
And
you know,
whatnot,
but, you know, it... I saw, you know, I was telling you guys before the show, so I saw Dan Rooney on during the Super Bowl, was being interviewed in one of those touchy-feely, how great a guy Dan Rooney is and how much he's done for the
league. Those really bother you, huh?
What? How much
about anybody but the Crafts.
How much he's done for the league and all that stuff and blah, blah, blah. And one of his quotes was, you know, I want to keep ticket prices down for my fans. You know, they've been so loyal, and I don't want to, you know, take advantage of them. I want to keep ticket prices low. Great.
That's
awesome.
That's admirable. But that's your choice.
Right. That's your choice. Don't then turn around to the teams that are making more money in their area and say, you have to share it with me.
Right. I couldn't agree more about that.
You know,
Fred and I aren't usually on the same page in these organizational moves, but I couldn't be more.
I thought maybe I'd have to be here to be the go-between, but you guys are getting along great.
You know, so at the same time.
It's nice to see, isn't it?
You know, at the same time, Robert Kraft couldn't turn around and say, well, you know, I built the stadium on private financing. You know, now I expect something from you. That was his choice.
Right.
And because of that, he has to be very aggressive, you know, with all the other stuff that he does. Suite pricing and ticket pricing and parking. And he has to make it up some other way.
And they didn't name the stadium Kraft Stadium and make no money off it. They named it Gillette Stadium. They got a lot of money. And that's where there's been an example for a few years about the Cincinnati Bengals. And their new stadium is Paul Brown Stadium. Well, that's a wonderful gesture for a guy who obviously did a lot for their team. But they could have honored him in a different way, raked in a couple $100 million for naming rights,
and
be in a little better shape.
And that's fine. You want to name it Paul Brown, that's great. But don't cry poor. The Redskins are making so much money by extra money by naming it FedEx Field. Well, that's great. You had a chance to do that, too. Don't expect Daniel Snyder to give you that money, you know, or if he does, then you got to start. And you got to get off your butt and start maximizing profits in your local area if you want those unshared revenues to become shared.
And there are some specific categories, and I know Paul was mentioning earlier, and I think you might have, you know, the currently unshared revenues, which include things like parking, luxury suites, local radio. And these are all things, when you think about about the crafts here, I mean, with WBCN, with radio, the luxury suites have been just, in the 5 years that we've been here, have just been...
Well, that's why all these teams want the new stadiums now. It's so important to get
exactly.
a new stadium.
You need
so
a new
you
stadium
can draw on that
sure.
revenue.
Sure.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, it's not just to get a new stadium. You know, because, for example, Arizona, they're not paying for this stadium. The Cowboys are getting a huge part of that stadium's paid for by, you know, the county that they're in
but
Texas.
But that's a good example of those two teams that you just brought up, and this is where I agree with you again, Fred. Arizona gets this whole state-of-the-art, which by all accounts is supposed to be a really, really jewel
retractable field, I believe,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
right.
I mean, all kinds of, and they're getting it paid basically for nothing. They're getting it paid for. It's all publicly financed. And they're going to be able to draw off of this stadium and use it, and certainly should increase their fan base. And
sure.
They should generate all sorts of new revenues that they didn't have. Yet they still want to share in all these unshared revenues with the other stadiums. Dallas, same situation. They're going to get a new stadium and get some help with it and have all these revenue streams. But you don't see Jerry Jones with his hand out
right.
looking for all this unshared revenue from Robert Kraft and Daniel
right.
Snyder
right.
and all the other big money owners.
You know, so... It's a tough situation, and you know, the other thing is I saw a quote by Lamar Hunt today. He made it in a Midwest paper, I think it was the Kansas City Star, about, well, you know, a lot of these owners now came into the league with a bunch of debt, and they're trying to, you know, aggressively get rid of that debt. And of course, he's talking about guys like Robert Kraft and Daniel Snyder and Paul Allen. Oh, I don't know about Paul Allen. He's got so much money, he probably paid cash. But
he probably gave it in a little brown paper bag right. and said, here you go.
But probably not. Good businessmen don't use their own money to do these things. So he's talking about the guys that have come in recently that have paid huge money for these teams. Well, yeah, but what they've done is made you money, Lamar Hunt. They've increased your team.
And that's what's made the NFL work so well in
so
the last
dozen
years.
So don't hold it against them that the economy is different than it was 40 years ago.
Right, when it's
when
benefiting
you
in, directly. Yeah.
And you guys paid cash.
Yeah.
You know, Dan Rooney got his, or Art Rooney got his team in a poker game, from what I understand. You know, so these guys came in, they had very little debt service, if at any at all, and they've just been making money. So they can afford to be these, you know, great sportsmen and all this stuff. But that's just not the case with the guys coming in now. But the older guys have to remember that it's because of these new guys that they're making so much money now. They've raised the value of all these football teams.
We get a lot of questions, too, regarding, you know, we throw around the terms, you know, unshared revenues, you know, as defined by the DGR, the gross revenues. And one of the pieces that Mike Florio posted on Pro Football Talk, he has a comment from Greg Aiello, who's an NFL spokesman, and he says that, you know, just to kind of throw some things that Brian just touched on, under the current system, teams share all national broadcast revenues, these are what's shared currently, all sponsorship revenues, all licensing revenues, and the visiting team's share of ticket revenues. And then he also has the following items are not shared. And among those are the home team share of the box office revenue, local radio revenue, local TV revenue. For the Patriots, that would be like
pre-season.
The Channel 5 stuff that they have is kind of Channel 5 WCVB, and Boston is the quote-unquote official Patriots station.
Right.
Local sponsorship revenue and stadium-generated revenues from signage, concessions, parking, and luxury suites, and so forth. So those are some of the, you know, just basic guidelines. So when we're throwing around shared and unshared revenue, what is part of the, you know, and what's happening is the owners are arguing about what should be shared and unshared, and then in turn the players are trying to fight to get the unshared revenue as being part of their piece of the pie,
right.
which will
raise
the cap.
The path, yeah.
So that's why the have-nots, for lack of a better term, are fighting this because they're going to have to their profit margin will decrease because if they're not able to share in, say, Pittsburgh is not able to share in New England's wonderful local revenue streams
right.
that they generate, the players still want to have that be part of their piece of the pie, so the cap is going to go up, yet Pittsburgh's revenue is not going to go up because they're not going to get any added revenue right. sharing. So it's a two-part fight that's going on.
Yes.
It's owner against owner, and then it's going to be players against owners,
right.
and that's why this is a little bit more complicated, I think, than what we all felt. I know I felt it would be resolved by now.
I thought it'd be resolved at the beginning of the 2005 season.
Because you figured both sides, when it all comes down to it, they've all benefited so much
right.
by having a cap, by having this structure, this CBA in place since 1993, that one way or another, even if you don't understand everything that's going on one way or another, they'd make it work because it benefits both sides.
Well, Matt Burke, offensive lineman, but he went to Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
He's a local guy. I don't know if he's local.
He's
but he
not
went
local.
To Harvard.
He's from Minnesota.
Yeah, he originally. Went to Harvard, and he's one of the active guys in the Players Association. He's
yeah.
one of the team reps and kind of a player spokesman league-wide. Even he said, he goes, they're nuts. This is a good thing. I can't imagine that they're going to let 2007 be an uncapped season.
Because they'll never go back
right.
to a cap.
And I can't
and
imagine.
Both sides is pretty much in agreement on
yeah.
that. I've heard Robert Kraft quoted on that topic, and I've heard Gene Upshaw, the NFLPA head, quoted. They don't believe they'll ever get a salary cap back.
Yeah.
And if that happens, then you're looking at baseball.
I think some of that might be just
Chicken
kind of
little.
Posturing, yeah. But one thing is clear. I mean, it doesn't just hurt the owners in uncapped season. It hurts the players, too, because instead of
very few players will truly benefit.
Yeah. Instead
a one-time uncapped year will be disastrous for the players as well as the owners.
Yeah,
a select few.
If you were 4 years in the league and ready to go into free agency, forget it. Because if they go to an uncapped, that 4 years turns into 6 years. You have to wait 6 years because...
And there's all kinds of rules like that, Fred. There's
yeah.
all kinds of little rules. You can't have your salary increase by more than 30%
mm-hmm.
from 1 year to the next. So you might say, well, geez, it's going to be an uncapped year. Why don't you sign me to a one-year $12 million contract?
Right.
It's uncapped. You
right.
can sign me to whatever you want. Okay, but you can't decrease that salary by more than 30% in 2008. So if there's a cap in place, you're screwed.
Right, right.
What are you going to do?
That's part of the problem, too. What if, well, they say that there won't be another cap, but if they go to the uncapped year and then something develops, they'd be screwed after that. But because of that rule that if they go to an uncapped year, and all this stuff about an uncapped year was put into place 12 years ago, 13 years ago, as these rules, assuming that they're so bad for everyone involved that this will be incentive to get a new deal
right.
done.
Right.
Right. That's why these rules don't really benefit anyone because it's the incentive.
And I think with the owners, the gang of nine or how many it is, and I think they're playing hardball with each other. I think they will get something done. 11th hour. They'd have to be crazy not to.
And I suppose we should also point out, you know, what we talked about at the beginning. Nine is significant because they need nine.
Right.
You know, otherwise, if there's only eight of them, then. You know, the three-quarters vote would go through, and there's nothing they could do about it. So if they lose, you know, as Florio writes, if one of them pulls a John Kerry and votes the opposite way that he's been talking,
yeah.
you know, all along,
sure,
and you get a flip-flop on it,
yep.
you know, the owners like Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones and Daniel Snyder, you know, the Giants situation, Who knows what's going to... They're going to be left out here because obviously they stand to lose
I wonder
more
what's
than
going on
others.
With the Giants, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say the Mariners, but I don't even
show.
Know who's running the show. Both sides
yeah.
Obviously dealt with loss, right?
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on with the Giants, but they're one of the high-revenue teams,
yep.
and they're getting this new stadium deal. I don't know. Obviously, the stadium in New York, or actually New Jersey, is owned by the New Jersey... Exposition,
yes, authority.
You know, but they give some type of sweetheart deal to both the Giants and the Jets so that they can earn the revenues from the games.
This is the number one. It's not very exciting. I mean, there's no question about that. It's a lot of legalese, and I for one, I'm not necessarily up on it all. But I think it's clearly the number one. Issue right now in the National
well,
Football
League. It absolutely is, and when you think back to, you know, during Super Bowl week, Richard Seymour was down there and did some interviews, and he's a guy who's not a free agent this year, But his situation has the CBA has major ramifications on him, because do the Patriots aggressively try to sign him to a long-term contract right now? Well, that's tough, because you can't spread out the signing bonus over more than, what, 4 years, I think it is right now?
4 years, yep.
And
unless there's
like
a new CBA in place.
A guy like Richard Seymour, who is going to be commanding a massive signing bonus whenever he hits the open market, the bigger that is, the harder it is to spread over several years. It also has major ramifications on the draft, because high draft picks have major signing bonuses. We went through that with Ben Watson a couple years ago, the 5 years versus 6 years. Well, now it can only be 4 years. And there's major you're right, it's not fun or easy to talk about or listen to, but it has such major ramifications on everything.
Well,
every team.
You know, and even beyond that, I was listening to Sirius, and I think it might have been Pat Curran was saying, well, if they have an uncapped year, that means a lot of capologists are going to lose their jobs because there won't be any need for them. That I don't agree with, because if you're smart enough to be a capologist, you still need a guy to manage all this stuff. So I'm not buying that, and I'm not worried about guys like Mike Tannenbaum.
I was just
going to
say, if that wouldn't break my heart, if those kinds of guys, because I like sports. I don't necessarily like the boardroom, and that's...
Yeah, I could care less about that. But it will change. You know, for example, who was it? I don't know if it was Nolan. One of the head coaches was saying that, you know, basically right now we're working on two plans.
Two plans. Shanahan said it. Belichick has said it.
Saban has said it.
Yeah. That's basically the MO right now around the National Football League, is everybody has two plans.
Yeah.
That can't be an easy thing to do.
No.
Hard enough to have only one plan to make your decision.
Exactly. And it sounds pretty simple. You say, okay, well, here we go. We have plan A and plan B, and we're going to operate. Let's see. I mean, how do you negotiate with a guy and say, well, if this happens, I'll give you this. If this happens, I'll give you that.
Yeah,
you know, and I know that's a simplistic way of looking at it, but that's not an easy way to formulate your future.
And you wonder if there really is any truth to the idea of maybe pushing free agency back a month. And which there has been some talk.
I think they're going to have to do that anyway. And I think if they feel like there's any kind of resolution, you know, if they're at loggerheads and they don't think that there's any chance that it's going to happen, then maybe they just let it go.
Why bother?
If we get an announcement in the next week, and it would have to be in the next week, that free agency has moved from March 3rd to, say, April 3rd,
I think that's
it must be a good sign.
Yeah,
it has to be
a good
sign, because they're saying, well, we're close enough. This extra 1 month, we can have a couple more meetings. We're close enough. We can get it done.
Well, it's not just, okay, here's when the deal is done. It's once the deal's done, all the teams have to educate themselves on it. They have to find out what's new.
I think either way, Fred, they'll do that month thing.
Exactly.
If it's close or if it's recently completed, I think they'll push it back a month and make sure everybody...
Just the Postons alone, letting them know what's going on.
No lie.
But they didn't know what was going on the previous one, so maybe they don't care.
Make it an even playing field for everybody. Give everybody, you know, we're going to say everybody's going to have an extra 3 weeks or a month to get up to par on all of
this. And these CBAs aren't little binders where you have a little paper clip and distribute it. I mean, I can't tell you
how many times I've looked up something in the CBA, and it's taken me 10 minutes just to find what I'm looking for because it's so complicated.
And you've got Article 15, Section 12, Roman numeral 72.
I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV.
It's longer than the American Constitution.
There you go.
It is.
Enough said.
So, I mean, I don't know what else I can tell you about that. All right, Jason, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Draft pick in 2000 to three-time Super Bowl champion and two-time MVP, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady has done it all. Until now.
Tom Brady launches a 60-yard.
Tom Brady is 2005 Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. And now you can get an autographed copy of the SI cover personally autographed by the perennial Pro Bowler himself. It's the must-have keepsake for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pre-game field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Sportsman of the Year Sports Illustrated cover autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 500 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
I'm Teddy Bruschi. You know there's no team like the Patriots. And no place like home field. No fans like ours. No victories like we've had.
And the Patriots have done it again.
And no better way to keep up with all of it than Patriots On Demand.
Introducing Patriots On Demand, exclusively with Comcast Digital Cable. It's your ticket to the Patriots all year long with Patriots video news, game highlights on Pat's replay, press conferences, and more. Just go to NFL Network On Demand and select from the Patriots On Demand menu to watch whenever you're ready. So call 1-800-COMCAST today and get your first month free on select Comcast Digital Cable packages.
There's nothing else like Patriots On Demand.
That's 1-800-COMCAST. Call today and get your first month free on select Comcast Digital Cable packages. Offer ends 1-106. Restrictions apply. Offer does not include applicable taxes and additional fees. Call for availability, pricing, equipment, and service details. NFL Network On Demand and Patriots On Demand are subject to the NFL's blackout policy. Following the promotional period, regular rates apply unless service is canceled by calling 1-800-COMCAST.
Looking for the perfect item for the big game? Wear what the pros wear exclusively from the Patriots Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your New England Patriots.
Tom Brady, touchdown, Patriots!
And New England Revolution official apparel. Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots and Revolution gear anywhere, including many items that you can't get anywhere else. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts and hats to specialty items like flags, commemorative prints, and collectibles. With a huge selection of Patriots items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Patriots Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Patriots Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public 7 days a week, except during home games. Can't get to the stadium? The Patriots Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at Patriots.com. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you are any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Welcome back to PFW in Progress. Fred Kirsch, Paul Perillo, and Brian Lowe here, sitting in for Tom Casale and Andy Hart, who are on the way to Indianapolis to cover the combine for Patriots.com and PFW.
Laurie Baranski wasn't available today?
Laurie had a little bit of a stomach virus, you know? So
I see. Okay.
Still not feeling
so,
well?
So, you know, we don't like to picture Laurie in that way. We like to keep our perception of Laurie
right,
pure.
So, see, you on the sidelines.
So I said, you go home, because we don't want to see that.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Gotcha. I just wanted to see where I was on the you know, replacement rung for the show.
Oh, you're right up there.
Okay, good.
You're right up there behind Edie and George Bajor. okay, so we got the emails, webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We're talking about the CBA. We're talking about free agency. Of course, the draft is coming up, and we've got some emails coming in about the draft. Tom's been doing a lot of work on the draft.
Tom put a very extensive, I don't know if you caught that, Fred, a very extensive mock draft up last week, or no, 2 weeks ago now, got generated a lot of feedback.
He had a misspelling in it.
Yeah, he got crucified for a misspelling in there. And by the way, I'm putting an end to the nonsense this week in SPFW.
We should talk about that, because I don't know if our
a life of its own.
I would imagine a lot of our listeners also read the Ask PFW column, which comes out every Tuesday, pages.com. It really, Paul, what's going on there? It's like,
well, we are
feuding and people yelling at each other.
When we first started it.
Personal attacks.
When we first started this, Brian Morey, Andy, and I used to try to have some fun with it. That was the original premise. We'd do our best to answer all the questions, but a very lighthearted approach. We would, you know, kind of be sarcastic a little bit, tease people. Well, that went very well for a while, and then all of a sudden, we had like a revolt where people thought that we were kind of making fun of them. And we were, you know, talking down, quote unquote, to the fans. So we stopped doing that, and we kind of went a little bit more straightforward. And then, as time went on, lately, like in the last, say, 6 months or so, fans have just gotten vicious with us. I mean, like every time we have,
are you sure there are fans and not like Steeler fans?
Well, I don't know what. No, that's a good point for it. Maybe they're not Patriots fans, but like someone would say. You know, so-and-so would be a good fit, and someone would answer that, I really don't see that happening, and then maybe the Patriots would end up getting that guy. And that would be like, you guys are just such idiots. You don't know anything that you're talking about. What level of football did you ever play? I mean, forgetting about, like, little editing mistakes, which, you know, unfortunately happen from time to time. Just, you know, we offer our opinion on whether or not a guy, you know, might be a Patriot or not. and we say no, and then he ends up being one, or we say yes, and he ends up not being one, and that makes you an idiot, and just the name call. Oh, so
I had to take one off.
Andy Hart just unleashed.
Tampons and nut sacks. I took it right off.
I went on to get that off, and I couldn't find it, and I was like, I went over to Tom, and I said, did you edit your ass PFW already? Because I got to get that tampon thing off of there. And he goes, yeah, Fred took it down.
Such an idiot.
Okay, he beat me to it.
Tom also got very defensive when someone attacked his credibility as a journalist.
Yeah, I mean, everybody can do the job better than we. Look, right. I'm sure there's 1,000 people out there, a million people out there that probably could, but
they're not.
They're not.
They're not doing it.
What are you going to do?
And that's exactly what Tom said. I'm the one working for the Patriots. They hired me to do this.
Well, I agree with the fans.
The resolution of it was Andy just had a vicious attack on the fans 2 weeks ago. Angry Andy strikes back.
It was fun.
And for the most part, we had probably about 50 responses, and I'd say at least 35 to 40 of them were very much in favor of us and saying how good for you for sticking up for yourselves and taking it back. But then it was about 10 or 15 that said, you know, grow up. You know, my favorite response was from a 15-year-old girl in Canada who was going to be the next PFW writer, by the way.
That's fine.
And there's no doubt she probably will be. And she just said, shouldn't you be above that? She's 15 years old and she's calling Andy immature. I loved it.
That's good. I like that.
So anyway, Tom kind of wrapped that up yesterday, and next week we'll be back to straightforward answering.
We'll see. I don't know. I don't know if you guys.
You don't think I can hold my tongue?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just think as the editor, I should step in and put an end to the nonsense.
You know, I like kind of the edge. I think you have to have the edge. I don't think you go overboard.
Do you remember the guy who wanted me fired?
Yeah.
Because I wrote that.
That's Brian Morey.
That was the other way around. Oh. No, I had written something and someone took it to heart. You know, a little sarcastic remark that I had, and the guy called Brian Morey, and left a voicemail on Brian's voicemail saying that he should fire Paul Perillo for what he said. Blah blah blah. So I emailed the guy back. And I said, look, I'm sorry that you were offended. It was, you know, it was supposed to be a joke. And, you know, we try to have a little fun with the answers in the mailbag. And it was supposed to be sarcastic. Sometimes I understand you don't read it that way. Oh, no. He emails me back. Oh, don't worry about it at all. I thought it was great. It was really fun. To which I emailed him back. I said, I know that you called in demanding that I be fired.
Right.
Were you only kidding about that?
So
he never emailed me back on that one. But the guy was my best friend when I emailed him. And, you know, who knows? So sometimes you're going to ruffle
feathers. I'm a little worried, though, about Tom, because somebody really nailed him about misspelling a word. And, you know, and
it was T-H-E-R-E instead of T-H-E-I-R.
So the guy actually tried to get Tom into trouble by sending me an email
that
Tom wrote about how you're worthless and you work for the Gap and let me know if you can get me 30% off on a shirt and all this stuff and blah 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 blah. So I showed it. I go, Tom, did you write this? He goes, no, I didn't write that. I go, I know who this person is. It's one of my idiot cousins that lives out in San Bernardino. I checked into it. It's the same area. It's the same zip code. He goes, I took care of it last week.
He's very ominous too.
Yeah, I took care of that.
You won't be hearing from Paulie no more.
I took care of that.
Tom saying I took care of it would worry me.
That would make me shake in my boots.
He said it's something going on in my family. I took care of it. So I said, well, okay, I don't need to see it. I don't need to know anymore. You know. So.
Enough said. Oh man.
Wow.
Yeah, I took care of that last week.
Wow. So, yeah, I don't want to know.
Oh, he won't be hearing from him no more.
So this is tough. This Ask PFW is dangerous business. You know, and Mike Reese does a good job. He's got his mailbag on Boston.com. But ours is a little different. I like ours to have a little bit more edge to it.
Well, that was the idea behind it, no question.
Yeah. I mean, his is very informational.
Mike's very straightforward.
It's loaded with good info and stuff. But, you know, Mike's not the kind of guy that's going to, you know, have that edge.
Right.
And I think that's where we are a little bit different. It's a little bit more fun. It's entertaining, too.
And also weekly in the off season, whereas Mike's is monthly, and there's more of a chance to kind of have a theme like a, you know,
right.
Weekly
knows,
all year.
There's plenty of places to get the Patriots info on Patriots.com. Let's make it a little entertaining as well. I don't see any problem with that. But it's
as long as tampons aren't involved.
I'm glad to hear you having that approach. I thought you were a little bit upset.
No, I'm not upset. I think we need to be.
And we certainly, you know, can cross the line
at times. I think we need to be a little self-censoring, though, at times. Like, I was surprised that the nut sacks and the tampons even got up there for 5 minutes.
Yeah, obviously, I was doing the same thing you did. When I was scrolling through, I immediately went into the system to get it out, and you had already taken it
up. And the other thing is, we never, ever want to be or mean to be disrespectful to our fans. You know, we appreciate the fact that they're even on our site reading it. So we don't want to disrespect the fact that they're doing that. But it's all in fun. So, anyway.
Closing up the Angry Andy era of SPFW.
Well, who knows? It could come back.
Well, it's like him. You know, Fred knows me very well. I've worked for 7 years for Fred, so when I say I'm going to put an end to the nonsense, Fred's not necessarily buying it until he reads it. He knows me.
Well, it's the definition of nonsense. What is, you know.
Because you know the first guy that says Perillo's an idiot. I'm like, what? What do you mean?
Oh, jeez. My local area network thing just got on.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no.
You know, that could be disaster.
So that means we're going
to. Doctor.
That means we're going to have to talk amongst ourselves for a while, or are we not even on?
I want to get to some of the emails that have come in. Webradio@patriots.com. It's webradio@patriots.com. Can't open the network problems. So this is we need a new laptop. There's one coming down here. It's not new, but it's a
new to you.
Yeah, new to us. So
as long as we're getting new laptops, can I get a new laptop with maybe a wireless?
What's wrong with yours?
I don't have wireless.
Oh, we can just get you a wireless card. That's easy.
Okay.
We'll just do that.
And I also can't log on every day, but, you know.
Oh, that's second.
Why can't you do that?
I have to do it twice. I have to restart and do it twice. That's why I don't shut off. That's why I don't shut off my computer anymore. I just leave it on
until we get emails saying, shut off your computer.
Did you email the help desk?
I have not emailed.
Well, you got to do that.
You know, a little self-sufficient, you know.
This is Paul. Oh, woe is me, the martyr.
Be a little more independent,
now, Fred.
And get the help.
A little more independent.
Oh, woe is me. When was the last time you heard about the fact that I couldn't log on? That's the first you've heard of it, right? So what is oh, woe is me? I've been dealing with it for over a year.
You didn't have to. You could,
you
know.
You didn't have to. You're not
I'll
a
email
martyr.
Email the help desk, and I'll let you know next year when they get back to me.
No, they've been much better.
Don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with Dave all day.
Exactly. Right.
Just not with his wireless.
George from Kernersville, North Carolina, says, I agree with whoever is saying that they weren't impressed by the Steelers last season. They were very beatable, and I also thought that the Bengals were going to take them out. I also agree with the predictions that were made over the playoffs by Andy that the Broncos would end the streak for the Patriots. I appreciate the way he is able to remove himself from his emotional ties to the team. Believe me, he's got no emotional ties. And make his picks. Isn't that what you try to do, make the right pick?
That is what we're supposed to try to do, yes.
But you know what? I thought I was... I'm upset with George.
I'm upset. I don't think you need to be praising Andy Hart.
But no one said that you didn't make the pick that you thought.
No, but he thinks that, you know, if you pick against the Patriots, you're getting rid of your emotional ties.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's what he's saying. I think that it's hard when you work for the Patriots to get rid of your emotional ties.
But I think, and pick okay.
For, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's suggesting that if you pick for – I pick for the Patriots. I think I can get rid of my emotional ties.
Right. Isn't that what you try to do, make the right
I thought the Patriots
pick?
Were going to win the game. That's
so
why I picked the Patriots.
The Patriots are looking long in the tooth at linebacker. Who are the two prospects for inside and outside linebacker that you would want to select based on the current draft board or free agent pool? Is there another hot prospect that is flying under the radar that we should look for as a free agent addition?
Go ahead.
No, there are some. There are a couple.
It's actually not a bad year for linebackers, which in the last couple of years hasn't been the case.
And A.J. Hawk is the number one guy, but he'll be long gone. There's guys like Abdul Hodge.
Well, isn't the other guy from Ohio State better?
Bobby Carpenter.
Well, Carpenter.
And Tom actually likes him a lot. And I think that he has.
Then. He's off.
But he has the ability to play inside and outside as well. You know, there's a kid, Abdul Hodge, that Brian just talked about. What's the guy's name? Someone's escaping me. It's in one of the upcoming emails, though.
Chad Greenway?
There you go. Yeah. Chad Greenway.
Yeah.
Iowa.
Yeah. These are all, Iowa, Virginia. These are some of the schools that Belichick has ties with.
And you know what's funny, too, is last year at the draft, you know, the post, you know, was whatever, the Saturday night, the first day, I wrote a story for the website, and we talked about Andy and I got this website that looked ahead at possible you know, rankings immediately. You know, it happens every year. They have the immediate rankings for the following class.
Right.
And among those, guys like Hodge and Greenway were already listed. And it's funny how a year later, these are the names, and the Patriots are in the market for a linebacker, and these are the names that we wrote about last year after the draft that, you know, because Belichick, remember the Patriots and Pioli, they traded a lot of the picks. They didn't feel like the class was all that strong.
Right, exactly.
They kind of geared themselves to the future.
Yeah.
And now there's some linebackers that may be available that might fit their system a little bit better than that has been the case in the past.
Right, and it's no coincidence. Chad Greenway, Iowa, Ferentz. Mm-hmm. Abdul Hodge, Virginia, Groh. These are guys who Belichick has ties with, and it's, you know, and we're probably going to start seeing that, maybe not this year, but soon with Notre Dame.
That's very important to Belichick, is to get a personal touch. Now, it doesn't mean that's the only way he'll draft
you.
But
he also knows
if you look, into every guy that the Patriots have drafted, I bet you can find some kind of tie.
And he knows that he can get, you know, whether it was with Nick Saban back at LSU or Ferentz, he knows he can get an honest evaluation from these guys who he's worked with. What's his name? Pat Hill at Fresno State. They drafted two guys last year. We all know Belichick's relationship with Pat Hill.
Right.
He can get an honest evaluation from these guys.
Can I coach this guy to do what I need him to do?
Is this guy, like, Pat Hill knows the system that Belichick runs. Pat Hill can give Bill Belichick an honest evaluation of how this guy can fit in.
I'm thinking I want him to do X.
Exactly.
Can he do it?
Right. Logan Mankins was a tackle, right, in college?
Yeah.
We have an opening at left guard. Can I plug Logan Mankins in at left guard? And Pat Hill probably said, he's your ideal candidate. And there you go. I mean, Patriots
trust
all their trends.
He trusts his evaluation.
And you look at it, he does it with the draft. I mean, how many Michigan State and LSU guys they got, you know, from Saban? You know, it's the long list. But not only with the draft, but you see him really lean on that when he's putting together his coaching staff.
Yeah.
You know, he finds guys that he's comfortable. He looks for guys, and he goes for that recommendation again from someone that he trusts.
Well, that's the key word.
It's the circle
trust.
Of trust.
It is. That's the key word, trust.
You know, like the Fockers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cliff from – can I trust you, Craig? Cliff from Sanford, Maine. I've seen a few teams already signing some of the free agents. I was wondering, what is the status of the Pats doing the same? I'd hate to see them letting players like Stephen Neal and Adam Vinatieri test the market. I know if they don't sign Adam, he will be in a Cowboys jersey next year, and I don't think my stomach could handle that. As far as the draft goes, what do you guys think of Maroney and Chad Greenway? If they're there at 21, which one would the Pats pick?
Well, in terms of the signing free agents, they got Don Davis done. But, you know, you got different categories. It's huge. And you got different categories of guys. You got, like, you know, Don Davis, Matt Chatham, guys like that who might be willing. You know, they're not necessarily on the early side of their career, and they're also not necessarily going to be commanding big bucks. And they might be willing to take a 1 or 2 year deal, low guaranteed money, and stay here. Clearly, Don Davis was. But then you got guys like David Givens and Stephen Neal who are maybe 4 or 5 years into their career, and most likely, or they have to think this way, this might be their only chance to cash in. And the Patriots, for all we know, might be extremely aggressive with Stephen Neal and his agent to try to get a deal done. But Stephen Neal might say, you know what, I'd like to stay here, but it's in my own best interest to kind of, you know, you got a guy like Kyle VandenBosch who signed last week with Tennessee. Tennessee gave him a chance last year, a 1 year contract. He'd had all kinds of injuries, and he sort of rewarded the team by A, signing before he was able to hit the open market. B, maybe signing a deal that's less money than maybe he could get in the open market. Not all guys are like that. So guys like Givens and Neal, who are the Patriots' more high-profile guys, I have to think that they're gonna test the market, and they really should. I mean, you can't argue with that thinking. That's what I think.
It's whatever a player, you know, feels is best for him. You know,
you have to.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see Neal resign here. I think I'd be a little bit more surprised to see Givens resign, because I think he's going to command more money in the open market than the Patriots are probably willing to offer. But I'm not going to be shocked if he resigns with the Patriots. See, that's one of those, Fred, that's one of those open the door and ask PFW to get slammed. Because we've all been asked the question about David Givens, and people say, well, you know, he was a seventh-round pick, and he might feel like he owes the Patriots something. And it's been our response, all three of us actually are in agreement on this, our response each time to that has been, I think that he'll probably get more money than the Patriots are willing to give. Now, God help us if the Patriots end up re-signing David Givens, we'll be getting a lot of nasty emails again. They'll be killing us.
Well-deserved. Well-deserved.
Absolutely. Now, what about The Maroney Greenway.
Well, a lot of it,
I think that's a good question.
It's a great question because those are two guys who could be available at 21, but it's a bigger question of running back versus linebacker as opposed to those specific guys, I think.
Well, I think for them, it is what, you know, where do they have those guys rated? Now, if they have Maroney as one of their top 20 players and they have Greenway as one of their 20 to 30 players, and clearly the answer is made, but if they're in the same group,
right?
You know,
right.
If they have them, you know, both of them are, you know, from like 16 to 21 and they're available at 21.
I think they'll take Greenway.
I'm thinking linebacker too. I'm really thinking,
I think linebacker is the more pressing need. So I think if all things are equal, I agree with you guys.
And I think
linebacker.
And I mean, we've seen with running back, we've seen what can happen with guys drafted in the 5th, 6th, 7th round. They can pan out. They're not as likely as first round, but I think you see more. I think you can get more of an impact, long-term, 10, 12, 15-year impact guy from a linebacker position as opposed to the running back.
Well, I mean, we've seen, you know, even last year where the inside linebacker wasn't a strong crop, guys come in and make immediate impacts. You know, guys that weren't even supposed to, like Lofa Tatupu, comes in and makes an immediate impact at that spot. So I think if you're a good athlete, you can make a much faster impact on your team at linebacker than you can like at wide receiver or running back,
right,
where you really are dependent on a lot of other things.
And even that being said,
is that the goal? To have a guy make the quickest impact?
That's exactly what I'm going to say.
Depends on your needs.
That's the thing at linebacker. They have the luxury, and I guess you can call it a luxury, if they do draft a guy like Chad Greenway. I mean, all four of the Patriots' starting linebackers are under contract this year, and you could expect that they'd all be there, and shouldn't have a tremendous drop-off from last year to this coming year.
But wouldn't you rather if, you know, let's say you got a young middle linebacker, wouldn't you rather have him come right in, make an immediate impact, give you the flexibility to be able to now move Vrabel back to the outside, use McGinnis in spots instead of a full-time, you know, really increase the depth there?
Sure, and that could be, that's a very likely situation, you know? Vrabel moving back to probably where he's more, comfortable.
Who knows what happens with McGinnis? He's under contract
maybe
right now.
Maybe get rid of McGinnis.
Right.
McGinnis is under contract right now in name only.
He needs restructuring. And
He thinks he's a free agent. According to an interview he did with...
Well, he's going to be a free agent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty clear. He's going to get... Now, that doesn't mean that he's actually going to be free.
Right.
It might be one of those wink-wink, we're going to have to release you, but we're going to re-sign you and whatever.
Right.
But maybe, you know, maybe he's not interested in that. Maybe he'd like to see what's out there. He's going to get released. I would be shocked if he's not released.
Yeah. David from England. If a good running back or linebacker is slipping in the draft, how far up will the Patriots trade to try to get one, and what will it cost them?
Well, it's interesting because what we talked about with last year, the team trading some of their 05 picks for 06 picks, which is something they do, certainly that gives them some flexibility.
Sure.
But the other thing to keep in mind, the higher you move up in the first round, the bigger the contract, the bigger the signing bonus. This all ties back into what we were talking about with the CBA. So to me, I don't know if they move up too much in the first round, even if a guy is there. To me, it's more second, third, fourth round. They see a guy maybe 10 spots ahead of where they're currently picking.
That's what they've done. You're right.
I don't see them moving up much in the first round.
They have moved
even
up.
Even if there's a guy they really
moved up. And listen, at 21, it's kind of hard to move up really, really far. I mean, beyond five spots, I think I don't think they have the ammunition now.
I don't think you really want to.
They went from 32 to 21 a couple of years ago. But I think it's a lot easier to go from 32 to 21 than it would be, say, from 21 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similar spots, but I think it would cost you an awful lot more.
It will.
To get to the top 10 from 21 than it was to get to the top 20 from 32.
Right. It costs you in what you'd be giving up in the trade, and it costs you big time in the signing bonus that you're giving a guy who has
not worried about that as you are. But it's definitely an issue.
It's significant.
It's definitely an issue, but I'm not as worried about the signing bonus in the rookie pool because I think it's all slots, and you got to pay the guy anyway. But I just don't think the Patriots really have that. I mean, they have some extra picks, but they don't really they don't have a multiple one to move up beyond. I mean, what's the fit? Do you see them getting beyond 15 if they had to, if they wanted to?
The guy would have to be, you know, just exactly a guy that maybe they had ranked in the top five who slipped.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's going to happen.
We
pretty much know that the guys... Unless the Patriots board is just so much different than everybody else's,
which who knows?
Could
maybe
be.
Maybe it could be.
I just really think that when they stockpile picks a year in advance, it's with more of the second, third, fourth round in mind. And, you know, if they're picking 100th and it's the third round and they see a guy at 90 and they can give up, you know, mm-hmm. a fourth round pick to move up, that's where they really, that's where they get
the like, I think last year when they were, they really liked some, you know, and talking to some people about the draft last year, they took Mankins at the end of the first round. They thought that that was kind of a safe pick. Mm-hmm. They thought that he was probably,
and a need,
you know, ready
a
to
need
play.
Say, right.
You know, filled a need, sure. Safe pick guy was probably ready to play. Panned out to be probably about what they had hoped for, starting all 16 games at left guard. Now, they also needed cornerback help. And, you know, we were doing our show as Fred, and we were talking a lot about the kid from Michigan, Marlon Jackson, who went just before them to Indianapolis. And there was a kid, Justin Miller, that Andy and I absolutely loved from Clemson.
But he got arrested the week before the draft, so that pretty much nullified that.
Well, he ended up, well, actually probably bolstered his standing with the Patriots.
you could look at it that way, too.
Yeah, he wasn't busy going to class or anything. So he ended up going to the Jets. They really liked Justin Miller from what I talked about, with some from what I've been able to gather. But here's the thing. They felt like there was no way he was going to be available at the end of the second round where they were set to pick again. They didn't feel like the value was there with the Mankins pick to pick him. They knew that he was going to go before they got a chance to go in at 64, but they didn't think he was worth 32. They felt once they get down to the middle of the second round, we can get a kid like Ellis Hobbs in the third round.
Right.
Who's probably not much different than Justin Miller. That's what they felt. Now, you can argue whether you think Ellis Hobbs is better, worse, the same as Justin Miller. I think they both had pretty solid rookie years in the AFC East, and I think they'll probably be two players that we'll know a lot about in the coming years. But that's kind of some of the things that they talk about, and I love finding out about stuff like that after the fact.
Yeah.
Because it's great, you know, kind of draft strategy that you don't really know, and you're not going to find out about it at the time because no one wants to tell you what they're thinking at the time. But, you know, conversations that you have thereafter kind of give you a little bit of insight as to what they were thinking about.
All right, Jason, let's take a break. Top of the hour, we'll be right back. Emails, webradio@patriots.com.
From sixth-round draft pick in 2000 to three-time Super Bowl champion and two-time MVP, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady has done it all. Until now.
Tom Brady launches a 60-yard.
Tom Brady is 2005 Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. And now you can get an autographed copy of the SI cover personally autographed by the perennial Pro Bowler himself. It's the must-have keepsake for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pre-game field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Sportsman of the Year Sports Illustrated cover autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 500 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
I'm Teddy Bruschi. You know there's no team like the Patriots, and no place like home field. No fans like ours. No victories like we've had.
And the Patriots have done it again.
And no better way to keep up with all of it than Patriots On Demand.
Introducing Patriots On Demand, exclusively with Comcast Digital Cable. It's your ticket to the Patriots all year long with Patriots video news, game highlights on Pat's replay, press conferences, and more. Just go to NFL Network On Demand and select from the Patriots On Demand menu to watch whenever you're ready. So call 1-800-COMCAST today and get your first month free on select Comcast Digital Cable packages.
There's nothing else like Patriots On Demand.
That's 1-800-COMCAST. Call today and get your first month free on select Comcast Digital Cable packages. Offer ends 1-106. Restrictions apply. Offer does not include applicable taxes and additional fees. Call for availability, pricing, equipment, and service details. NFL Network On Demand and Patriots On Demand are subject to the NFL's blackout policy. Following the promotional period, regular rates apply unless service is canceled by calling 1-800-COMCAST.
Looking for the perfect item for the big game? Wear what the pros wear exclusively from the Patriots Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your New England Patriots.
Tom Brady, touchdown, Patriots!
And New England Revolution official apparel.
Unbelievable! Taylor Twellman!
The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots and Revolution gear anywhere, including many items that you can't get anywhere else. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts and hats to specialty items like flags, commemorative prints, and collectibles. With a huge selection of Patriots items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Patriots Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Patriots Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public 7 days a week, except during home games. Can't get to the stadium? The Patriots Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at Patriots.com. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you are any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
This is PFW in progress.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
Do you know who I am? I'm kind of a big deal. People know me. I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books. And my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Paul Perillo.
I'm all about having fun. You know, get a couple of cocktails in me, start a fire in someone's kitchen, maybe go to SeaWorld, take my pants off. Anyway, I become kind of famous for my signature catchphrase.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
And Andy. And Andy? He was like a god walking amongst mere mortals. He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr. And suits so fine they made Sinatra look like a hobo. In other words, Andy was the balls. Andy Hart.
I'm the stylish one of the group. I know what you're asking yourself. And the answer is yes. I have a nickname for my penis. It's called the Octagon, but I also nickname my testes. You ladies play your cards right, you just might get to meet the whole gang.
And some guy named Tom.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late. I like to eat ice cream and I really enjoy a nice pair of slacks. Years later, a doctor will tell me that I have an IQ of 48 and am what some people call mentally retarded.
EFW in progress.
Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight.
Skyrockets in flight. Afternoon delight. Afternoon delight.
Okay, welcome back to PFW in progress. Brian Lowe is... he's gone. He's got to get ready for a podcast today. Oh, no, tomorrow.
He's got a regular show today.
He's got a regular show.
They're putting a PVN up
today.
Oh,
that's right. PVN on Comcast, and then he's got to get ready for... is he doing a podcast?
He'll do the podcast with me tomorrow, yes.
Okay, all right. I knew we had a podcast.
Hopefully we'll have some resolution to the Patriots franchise situation. Well, we will have resolution because they have to name it by 4 o'clock if they're going to use the franchise tag. That'll be our podcast for tomorrow.
That'll be tomorrow. All right, webradio@patriots.com is the email address, and we got emails coming in. Thank you for that. I'd like to hear about what people, if anybody's been downloading the podcast and what they think about it. Be interesting to know.
Any suggestions as to what we might be able to use for content that might be more interesting to you?
New addition to patriots.com, and I'd like to know what people think about that. Let's see. Russ from Canton, Mass. writes in. I read online somewhere that the Patriots would be interested in defensive lineman Darrell Tapp in the draft if he would be willing to move to linebacker. He looks like he could be a very good replacement for Willie McGinnis in a few years. What are your thoughts?
Unfortunately, Brian Lowe left. No. Look, I'm not all that familiar with the player, so I'm not going to even try to...
We will be, though.
I'm not going to try to fake my way through. Clearly, like the pass rusher, the outside pass rushers in the college ranks are definite candidates for the Patriots because of the way they use their outside linebackers, you know, kind of quasi-defensive ends. So if he's a smaller, quicker defensive end type at the college level, then I would agree with the emailer wholeheartedly. He'd be a guy that could be potentially an outside linebacker in the Patriots system.
Well, what we're waiting for all the tapes from this company that we order them from.
Right.
And
it should be here soon.
All the college guys, and what we do is they sit down and they divide them up by position, and Brian and Tom and you and Andy will sit and watch every one of these guys, so you'll have a very well-informed opinion.
Yeah. Well, at least, you know, you can put a face with the name. Like, right now, all these guys are just names to us, and I'm not all that familiar. I mean, this obvious... you know, the skill position guys that you know, but there's not a lot of familiarity with, you know, the differences between Chad Greenway and Abdul Hodge. You know, I can't really tell you that right now.
Let's see. Henry writes in. He's from San Antonio, Texas. Love the show. Just wanted to know how many years left do these current Patriots players have in their contract? Mike Vrabel, Rodney Harrison, Teddy Bruschi, Kevin Falk, and Larry Izzo. And what are the chances Jay Fiedler backs up Tom Brady in the 2006 season? P.S. Why did Big T get cut off the show last week?
Big T was just spouting off at the mouth, and you know.
Who's Big T?
The guy who called in.
What was he saying?
He was just, you know, I think he was a Dolphins fan.
Oh, yeah?
He said he thinks the Dolphins are going to win the Super Bowl next year, and Saban is going to coach circles around Belichick, and he just, you know, which is fine. Look, we're not just about the Patriots' opinion here, but he had no facts basing his opinion. He was just spouting, so we cut him off.
Okay. Big T.
Big T.
Anyway.
I think there's a good chance, Jay Fiedler, by the way. I think that's an intriguing guy, and I think one of the Patriots, I know that Belichick has spoken very highly of him in the past, and I think the big question is what do they think of Matt Castle right now? And if they need to have a veteran backup in here, Jay Fiedler, I think you could do a lot worse than Jay Fiedler in that regard.
What about Doug Flutie?
I think you could do a lot worse than Jay Fiedler in that regard.
Has Doug announced what his plans are yet?
For example, Doug Flutie. You could be a lot worse than Jamie. No, I guess Doug is still interested in coming back here, in all seriousness. And he is not, the last report that I saw, Lenny Megliola talked to him in the Metro West Daily News, saying that he'd like to come back, hasn't heard anything from the Patriots as of yet. Now, I'm not sure if the Patriots are interested in going that way. Now, the question with Fiedler, the big stumbling block there, Fred, is he's dealing with a shoulder problem as well. Who knows what his availability is going to be. If he can't throw all year, you're looking at like a Jim Miller situation from a couple years ago. I don't think that does the Patriots any good.
No. What about contract lengths? Mike Vrabel, Harrison, Bruschi, Falk, Izzo. Vrabel.
Harrison is under contract through 2008, I believe, because he signed a six-year deal before he came here in 2003. Vrabel has a couple of he just signed an extension during the training camp last year, if you recall, but I don't remember exactly what that is through. Now, Kevin Falk also re-signed last year as a free agent, so neither one of those two gentlemen are going to be up imminently. I'm not exactly sure when their contract expires. I'd have to look at my sheet. Who else is on there?
Bruschi and Izzo.
Izzo, I think.
I think he's coming up next year.
I think you may be right. Bruschi. 2004, I want to say he signed a four-year deal.
Okay.
So that's 5, 6, 7, 8. I think I want to say he signed a. I think he signed a four-year extension. So I think he's at least through 2007. I'm pretty safe with that. Unfortunately, the Patriots media guide doesn't list this information anymore per order of the coaching staff.
Okay.
They don't want that information in the bios anymore.
Let's see. Phil says all the labor talk gives me a headache.
Sorry, Phil. You're right. I mean, it is. That's why I said it. It's a boring topic, but it's a very important one.
Let me know when it's resolved. Anyway, please ask Tom or Andy to look up a player at the Combine by the name of Will Durding, a linebacker from Washington State. I saw him destroy UT. Now, would that be Texas?
Texas.
In the Holiday Bowl in 2003, but he dislocated his wrist in 2004 and tore an ACL in 2005. He can't run yet. But he got invited to the combine. He's definitely a redshirt, but he may be a good investment for a seventh-round pick. It seems like the Jets are getting rid of players left and right. Any thoughts on picking up an offensive lineman or two from them? Yeah, they got rid of Fabini,
I guess.
High Law, and who else? One other
Fiedler.
Guy. Jay Fiedler. So Fabini might be interesting. I don't know what.
I don't know if he might be a little rich for the Patriots' blood, but you know what? Don't rule something like that out because I think the Patriots, the fact that Matt Light, this is troubling to me, Fred. I don't know how you feel about this. Matt Light last year seemed like he went from out on the injury report to doubtful, like he was making progress, and then he suffered that setback where he had to have an additional procedure to drain some blood from the injured area in his in his leg. That concerns me that he was then out again and ultimately out of the picture. I'm wondering if he's having problems and his rehab, and how that would factor into his availability next year and going forward. Now, obviously, he signed a big extension too, so that would be a very big blow, I think, to the Patriots if you know he were to be shaken up long term here and not be necessarily available. And maybe a guy like Fabini could be good insurance for him.
It could be.
Because he's a pretty good player, Jason Fabini.
No, and you know, Belichick has a little history with him, doesn't
sure.
he?
Sure.
Yeah. Sean, Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Hello, guys. I'm a total agreement that the CBA is the number one priority in football this offseason. With that in mind and thinking that the owners will come to their senses, the next biggest thing will happen tomorrow. Will Adam Vinatieri be franchised? If not, we could be competing with one Dwayne Charles Parcells for his services. If you think about it, the Cowboys might have won the division if they had a kicker. I hope we treat Adam with the respect that he deserves. To the fans who still hope for Ty Law, that he's going to be back in Foxborough, I saw him on ESPN News last night, and Ty has not changed. He's all about Ty. Have another donut, Ty. He's not coming here, period. Write that on the chalkboard.
I disagree with that. I think if Ty Law feels the Patriots are the best situation for Ty Law, then he's coming here.
But do you think that the Patriots would ever pay him what Ty Law thinks he should get?
I don't have the answer to that question because I don't know what the answer, what he's going to get offered.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If the Patriots, let's just say for argument's sake that Ty Law wants X million and no one offers him X million, but someone offers him, Y million, that's less than that. And it's the Patriots. You don't think that Ty Law would come back here?
I think he would.
I think he'd come back here in a heartbeat.
I think he would.
If he felt it was the best he could do,
yeah,
he would come back here. And I think the Patriots would have him back. We know that they asked him to come back last year.
Do you think they'd have him play cornerback or safety?
Cornerback.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They make him lose some weight, though.
Well, he clearly needs to lose weight. He wasn't in great game shape last year, Fred. We can all agree with that, right?
No.
And he still intercepted 10 passes.
Yep.
I mean, let's give this guy a little credit for being a pretty good player. I mean, a lot of the talk when he left here was, it was all Belichick. Then he went out 20 pounds overweight on one foot and picked off a league-high 10 passes. So can we say that the guy was a pretty good player? I know that's hard for you.
No, I think he's a good player.
I know that's hard for you. He's not here anymore.
Why do you think I don't think he's a good player?
Because all guys that leave the Patriots become less players, less talented than they were when they were Patriots.
Oh, no. I just think that it has nothing to do with talent. It has intelligence.
What do you mean?
Well, they couldn't be that smart if they left. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I see.
James writes in, sorry, I have not emailed much lately.
That's true. James hasn't been emailed.
Yeah, I did not have anything good to say about the playoffs, how they ended for the Patriots, and was not into the offseason mode like others have been. I figured it would be better to wait till I did have something positive to report on concerning the team in the upcoming free agency period. Saw an interview last night with Ty Law on ESPN News, another person saw it, and he was asked whether it was all about the money in reference to who he might sign with. He said it was not all about the money.
That was totally taken out of context.
He said that he missed being in the playoffs and he wanted to play for a team that had a chance for competing for a title. He was also asked about the possibility of playing again for the Patriots. He said that he had a great relationship with Bill Belichick.
Hey, what's up, Bill? How you doing?
And the team, no matter what was said in the offseason 2 years ago, and that he would like to play for the team again. This kind of leaves the door open for Law to return to the team, but I am not sure he will be willing to play for the Patriots for the money the Patriots would be willing to pay him. Who knows? It might happen given the right circumstances.
Yeah, see, I'm more in agreement with James's stance on it than Sean's, and the reason for that is I don't know what the market is going to hold for Ty Law. Now, if someone goes out there and offers him $10 million in guaranteed money like he talked about a couple of weeks ago, then I agree with Sean. There's no way he's going to come back and play for the Patriots. But if the market is not quite that hot for him, and you mentioned it, Fred, he's not really in great shape, and he was limping every game last year that I saw him play, from game one against Kansas City to the two games against the Patriots to the Monday night game against Atlanta, he limped all over the field.
Yeah.
So maybe that foot problem is more, and this is why I worry, by the way, about Matt White. I see the way Ty Law limped around all year. Maybe that whole problem with the blood flow around the injury and that's long-term chronic problems it's going to lead to. Maybe the market just won't be all that big for Ty Law. You know, a 10th year, 11th year guy limping around 20 pounds overweight, regardless of how many interceptions he had.
If Ty Law wants to play a few more years in this league, he should play it with the Patriots. Because he's got to think beyond the last 3 years. He would definitely have a market for himself in this area. This is where he made his bones. This is where he won his championship. He can extend his career beyond the playing field if he plays here.
All right. I agree with that. I agree. 100% I agree with everything you just said. But I'm going to make an argument with you. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that he signed with Pittsburgh last year.
Yep.
And they won the Super Bowl, and he's from that area. You don't think he would have marketing?
Oh, absolutely. But that's a big if, and it didn't happen.
Well, you're saying it's the best position for him.
Right now, it is.
Well, why wouldn't Pittsburgh be? Well, I don't think it is. I think you're right. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I agree with your premise.
All right.
Why couldn't he go somewhere and put a team over the top? What if he went to Indianapolis?
Right, first of all,
Indianapolis is probably a better example.
But think of it this way. Pittsburgh is where he's from, but they've won their championship now.
That's why I said Indianapolis is probably a better example. What if he put a team like Indianapolis or Jacksonville or Miami over the top and they won the Super Bowl? You don't think he could? He lives in Miami now.
Yeah, I know. Well, Miami, but I think that as far as the fans go, this is where he's recognized.
I think
this is where he'd have the best off-field opportunities.
I agree with you on that. I think he would have some off-field opportunities here that he probably wouldn't get in, 30 out of the other 32 franchises. But I think that the off-field thing isn't as I don't think that's as lucrative as you think it is.
If
let's
he went
put it that
to
way.
Indy, he'd be dominated by Peyton Manning and all that.
If he went to Miami and Miami ended up going, all the way.
That'd
I'm not
okay.
saying – I just don't – I think that you overrate the off-field.
Maybe.
Ty Law was here for how many years? 9 years?
Yeah.
What did he do here off the field?
I don't know.
How much money did he make off the field?
No.
How much money does Troy Brown make doing those –
I don't know.
I don't think it's that significant
for
a guy who –
But he said it was a factor.
Yeah, well, for Troy Brown – it probably was, because what was the biggest contract Troy Brown signed? $11 million? Signed $11 million?
I'm not sure how hard
Ty Law had a $49 million contract.
Yeah, I'm not sure how hard Ty Law tried for that off-field stuff, but he's got to start thinking about it now.
Well, if he's interested in that angle, sure, but I don't think he necessarily needs it.
Yeah.
That's the difference between a guy like Troy Brown, who was a lower roster player for the first 5 or 6 years of his career and scraped his way to a very productive NFL career, as opposed to Ty Law, who was a first-round pick and got a good signing bonus and signed a huge 7-year extension. I think it might have been $52 million. He got the $14 million signing bonus. He made more in a signing bonus probably than Troy Brown made it for any of his long-term deals.
That was a huge contract back then. Gabe from Trevose, Pennsylvania. I realize being at the Combine, you'll be getting a slew of questions pertaining to the Pats, like maybe which position would the Pats pick first or moving up in the draft. I agree with the Mike Reese column in that even if they did, it wouldn't be too many spots up. What did Mike Reese write?
I have no idea.
Did he write that they could go up?
I don't know.
They could go up. They could go down. They could stay where they are. My question to you is, what
That'll
is
the Brian Morey column?
Right. Well, my question to you is, what is the Patriots' position as far as cap space for next year? Of course, barring who stays and leaves, how much cap room would the Pats have minus their draft picks and current players under contract who are not on free agency in order to sign free agents, which Belichick likes to do? And he makes sure that we know that he spelled there the incorrect way just to make a dig at Tom.
Good job, Gabe. I like it.
Also, do you think...
I think they have decent cap maneuverability. I mean, it's hard to say for sure. It's going to go between 92 and 95 by all reports that I've read. Like we said earlier, McGinnis is probably going to get released. He's not going to play at that bloated cap number. He would have the biggest cap number on the team,
What's it, like $10 million?
Yeah, it's up there. So he's not going to play for that. He's going to get released and probably re-signed at a much more cap affordable deal.
Right now, they're right up against it. I think it's like $300,000 below the cap. But
then it's going to expand for the new league.
But then the cap is like at 87 now or something like that? Or
I think it was 85.
85. So immediately, if nothing else happens, they'd be $10 million under. Some guys have bigger contracts, so
that eats up a lot of that space.
That eats it up a little. But they're going to release guys, like Tom said, like Paul said. So, I wouldn't worry about cap space. That's not going to be a factor.
No, and I think that they've done as good a job as anybody in maneuvering themselves with the cap.
Also, do you think the Patriots could be waiting to see if there is a new collective bargaining agreement in order to make a jump on certain players? Well, I think a lot of teams are looking at that, but
They're probably going to have to, like we talked about also earlier, free agency is probably going to get put off.
Yep.
If the new CBA is has a chance to be put in place, I would bet my money that the start of free agency would be put off for a few weeks.
I would think so. Absolutely. All right. Emails is webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
From sixth round draft pick in 2000 to three-time Super Bowl champion and two-time MVP, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady has done it all. Until now.
Touchdown! Tom Brady launches a 60-yard.
Tom Brady is 2005 Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. And now you can get an autographed copy of the SI cover personally autographed by the perennial Pro Bowler himself. It's the must-have keepsake for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Sportsman of the Year Sports Illustrated cover autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 500 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
I'm Teddy Bruschi. You know there's no team like the Patriots. And no place like home field. No fans like ours. No victories like we've had.
And the Patriots have done it again.
And no better way to keep up with all of it than Patriots On Demand.
Introducing Patriots On Demand, exclusively with Comcast Digital Cable. It's your ticket to the Patriots all year long with Patriots video news, game highlights on Pat's replay, press conferences, and more. Just go to NFL Network On Demand and select from the Patriots On Demand menu to watch whenever you're ready. So call 1-800-COMCAST today and get your first month free on select Comcast Digital Cable packages.
There's nothing else like Patriots On Demand.
That's 1-800-COMCAST. Call today and get your first month free on select Comcast digital cable packages. Offer ends 1-106. Restrictions apply. Offer does not include applicable taxes and additional fees. Call for availability, pricing, equipment, and service details. NFL Network On Demand and Patriots On Demand are subject to the NFL's blackout policy. Following the promotional period, regular rates apply unless service is canceled by calling 1-800-COMCAST.
Looking for the perfect item for the big game? Wear what the pros wear exclusively from the Patriots Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your New England Patriots.
Tom Brady, touchdown, Patriots!
And New England Revolution official apparel.
Unbelievable! Taylor Twellman!
The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots and Revolution gear anywhere, including many items that you can't get anywhere else. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts and hats to specialty items like flags, commemorative prints, and collectibles. With a huge selection of Patriots items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Patriots Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Patriots Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public 7 days a week, except during home games. Can't get to the stadium? The Patriots Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. At Patriots.com. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you are any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
All right, welcome back to PFW in Progress. Fred Kirsch and Paul Perillo. Andy Hart and Tom Casale are on their way to Indianapolis to cover the combine for Patriots.com and PFW. So I think their flight's leaving at 3. And right now, Andy's probably trying to coax Tom Casale through.
He's a white knuckle flyer.
Yeah, he really is.
You're not usually that close to him on the plane. I generally sit in the same row.
Yeah,
he's
but
tough.
He's different than Brian. Was also a white knuckle, but Brian would scream and yell. And,
yeah, Brian would talk his way through it. Tom would just get tense.
Yeah, he just sits there and stares straight ahead. You know. But all right, let's see. Brian in Miami. Speaking of Brian's, writes in. Excuse me, I'm drinking a little Diet Pepsi here, and I had a little gas. So,
no secrets here on PFW in Progress.
He says, enough Dylan bashing, please. Yes, he did have a bad year by his standards. His career average is 1,158 yards a year, not too bad. He did have 12 TDs last year, tying his career high from the previous year.
I didn't come here to get no stats.
And his yards per carry career of 4.3 has gone up and down throughout his career, regardless of his season totals. I think he had an off year simply to do with his injuries, which, of course, we do not know the extent of. I guarantee the Pats do not take a running back in the first three rounds of the draft. What do you guys think? There is no need. A healthy Dylan Falk and pass is more than sufficient for our offense. I know that Lawrence Maroney is a stud, but I would like to see the Pats draft defense, defense, defense. Do you think that Matthias Kiwanuka will be available at 21, and if so, will the Pats be interested in drafting him and possibly converting him to a linebacker? Now, Kuhn, is that the BC kid?
Yeah, I do think he'll be available at 21, and I do think that he has a chance to be one of those guys that we're talking about, the hybrids, defensive end linebacker types. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know how high the Patriots are on him. Hopefully, you know, Tom and Andy can get a couple of moments with Scott Pioli and maybe even Coach Belichick and maybe get a little, I mean, it's very doubtful, but hopefully we can get a little bit of insight as to what kind of players at least they're high on. You know, even if they're guys that we don't have any chance to draft, what kind of guys they think are good players.
Now, as a fan, though, do we want them to tell us
who they're interested in?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
No, as a fan, no, you don't want that out there. But, I mean, you can do that without necessarily tipping your hand. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You can find out who they're high on and who they're, you know, got. They might not have any idea of what kind of player will be available at 21. But, anyway, you know, a guy like Kiwanuka, for example, I think you could talk about and not say, oh, we're interested in drafting him.
Right.
You could say, well, yeah, I don't really know if he has the skill set to be the stand-up outside linebacker. Maybe he does have the skill. You know what I mean? Without necessarily saying, well, oh, he's at 21, we're going to take him. I mean, they're not going to do that. I can tell you that for sure. What do you think of the running back stuff that he started off his email? Was it Sully?
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
I would not be willing to make the guarantee that they won't take a running back in the first three rounds.
Well, his stance is predicated on the fact that Dylan simply
had
an off year.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, that Dylan will be somewhere, I don't want to say as good as he was in 2004, but let's just say he's a solid 1,500, 1,400-yard back.
Then they don't.
You don't need a running back?
No.
No. Is he just going to do that forever?
No, you know what? You're right. They need to draft a young guy, but, you know, I don't know first or second round if they need to do that.
I just think that at some point you need to address that situation. You've
I
tried
agree.
To address it in the draft several times in later rounds, and it hasn't worked
and
yet.
And it hasn't worked, but that doesn't mean it never will work.
I think it's a crapshoot. It's a long shot for it ever to work like that. Everybody points to guys like Terrell Davis and Jamal Anderson. And for every one of those guys, there's 100 that get drafted in those rounds that never even make the league.
That's true.
And Antoine Womack is one that the Patriots tried to draft, and it never works. It almost never works, and for you know, you might catch lightning in a bottle once in a while, but I think you're much more apt to do that at other positions than you are at running back.
Okay.
At some point, I'm not saying they need to draft Lawrence Maroney or Lendale White or whoever in the first round. I just think that at some point they need to address their back of the future, and they haven't done it yet.
No, I think they do need to get a guy who you know is young that you can build around, not just someone that you're going to insert for a couple years. They need to get that solid foundation of running. And, you know, we thought we had it for at least a few years with Corey Dillon, but I was shocked at the season he had last year.
And I'm not willing, you know, this is a totally separate argument, but I'm not as willing to write off his 2005 as injury-related as a lot of other people.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal was.
I mean, he certainly got plenty of rest.
Yeah.
Plenty of rest. And I don't understand why in some quasi-meaningless games late in the year, he would have gotten the workload that he got if he wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
The Jets game in particular, in that Monday night game the day after Christmas, I think, he got like 18 second-half carries in that game. I mean, the game was over.
Yeah, so I don't know what
Patrick Pass or whoever, you know, whoever else was healthy, Kevin Falk, whoever was active for that game could have run out the clock. Yeah. Anybody could have done that.
Yeah, it just didn't. It seemed like he just wasn't hitting holes fast enough.
That's my
feeling.
Just
a little too tentative. And
I'm sure that he had some injury problems. I'm not saying that he was completely healthy from week 1 through week 17, but I just think that to chalk it all up to injuries, I don't think is necessarily accurate.
George from Kernersville, North Carolina. I've read an article over why the owners are arguing over the current revenue-sharing agreement. It appears that some of the team owners effectively running their business to maximize profits outside the current agreement would be penalized for doing a better job running their business. The owners who don't really drive more revenue are attempting to capitalize on those motivated owners and franchises, basically penalizing the motivated owners for maximizing their opportunities and asking them to share in what appears to be creative ways to improve their franchises. It looks to be counterproductive. Under the current agreement, all owners can pay their employees with TV dollars before a ticket is sold. In my business, if I was guaranteed to be able to pay my employees before selling a single product, I'd be a very happy camper. If these owners like Wilson and Rooney think that they are underprivileged today, just let the cap go and see where they end up, on the short end of the stick. Where would the Patriots fall out in all of this if it were a capless league again? Would they remain within business limits, or would they be able to spend and sign to their heart's desire? Your thoughts.
I think the Patriots would be in a strong position with or without a cap.
I think so, too.
I think that they clearly, Belichick clearly understands the economic parameters of the way the game is set up right now, as well, if not better than everyone. And that's a huge advantage in my mind for the Patriots right now, is the way that they conduct business. Their business model, I think, is as good as any right now in the NFL. You take the cap away, and you still have that talent evaluator and that coaching. And you have an owner who's not going to be afraid or unwilling to spend money.
Yep.
So those advantages stay in place, and now you can pay players.
You know,
so I don't think it. I think clearly it's better for the Patriots if the salary cap stays. But I think if it goes, I still think that they're one of the better teams.
Now I think that getting, you know, obviously you can't win without talent in any sport, including the NFL. But I think that, you know, unlike baseball or basketball, where, man, you can get four or five of the best players, and really,
right,
football, that helps.
Players.
But you got to have it all working together. You know, you can't have a dominant pitcher who's just going to win 20 games for you. It just doesn't work that way. You know, you can have a great quarterback, but he's got to have the things around him, too. So it's tougher to do in football than just spend money and get the best players. You got to have those things, Paul, like you're talking about, you know, the coaching and the talent evaluation. How do these pieces fit with the system that we're trying to run?
See, now, I think the Patriots would be hurt if they had this great grasp of the system, but they were like a have-not and didn't necessarily have the unlimited cash flow. I don't want to say unlimited. That's not fair, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, they have a large cash flow. They generate a lot of revenue, and they could pay more than they do now if they so, you know, chose to. Now, obviously, the parameters, the way the league is set up right now, don't allow it. But I think that, you know, much like the Red Sox, they don't have the Yankees money, but they have more than most. I think the Patriots might not have Daniel Snyder money or Jerry Jones money or Paul Allen money, but they have more than most.
Right.
And I think they would be able to compete financially with anybody in an uncapped system. And I think they have the coaching and the organizational setup that they would be able to do that with or without the cap. And I think it's to their advantage to have the cap because I think that, like I said, I think they manipulate it better as well or better than anyone.
Well, I think that, you know, even, you know, a lot of people say, well, the cap has helped keep things, you know, it created parity in the league. And for the most part, that's true. It's allowed teams that haven't been good to rise up quicker than they would otherwise. But, again, it's not like the NBA where, you know, it's always the best teams or
the best players.
Yeah, it's always the best.
If you're going to be good in the NBA, you have to have one or two of the best, say, 10 or 15 players in the league.
Right. And at the same time, I would argue that maybe the parity thing's a little bit overblown in the NFL because it still is, for the most part, the same teams over certain.
I will say that I kind of agree with you a little bit. I think parity is huge in the NFL, but I think as teams now, people forget it hasn't been that long since the current system has been in place. 1993, basically,
right,
is when this current salary. That's not that long of a period of time.
Right.
You know, when you're talking about 15 years. It's, you know, it took a good 7-8 years for people to understand, okay, everybody went out immediately and said, oh, salary cap, no problem. We can do A, B, and C.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, 5 years down the line, they said, oh, these are the repercussions from A, B, and C.
Right.
We need to have another plan. Well, Belichick, I think, was ahead of the curve in figuring out the repercussions and finding out how to deal instead of A, B, and C. He went with D, E, and F. And now I think other teams are learning that, And there's where you're getting your Philadelphia's, Fred, your Pittsburgh's, your Patriots, your Indianapolis, your Denver, some other teams that have consistently been in the mix.
Yep.
So I think there is something to what you just said. The parity is a little bit overrated because if you look at the 12 teams, you know, like we had terrible years picking the playoff teams last year. We still got 6 or 7 out of the 12 before the season started.
Right. If it was true parity, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, it would be upside down. You know.
Right.
It would be hard to get.
And then on the other hand, you got teams like Detroit who do spend the money, and they can't win because they're just not.
They have the wrong people spending it.
Yeah, the wrong people spending it, and once they get them, they're not either coaching them right or, you know, they're not spending it in the right place. And
can you imagine Bill Belichick just drafting the same position in the first round every year?
Well, he did with tight end.
Well, not every year.
No, I know. No,
the two in his six drafts. I mean, wide receivers in three straight drafts.
You know,
the Lions did.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, you know, it's a fine game, but I think it comes down to when you got a guy like Belichick who really understands the game of football so well, he knows when he can afford to not get necessarily the best player, but get a guy who knows football. And I can fit him into this spot, and as long as this player is willing to, you know, fill a role, we'll be okay.
See, I think a lot of teams do that. I think where Belichick separates himself is his ability to get that role. I think that's where the guys like Joe Gibbs, you know, have been able to do, and Parcells, they're able to get in Cowher, you know, they're good coaches, and they're able to take their players and make them do things
that they need them to do. Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of teams that try for those players. Like they, you know, let's face it, there's 53 guys in the team. If they all just said we got to get the best player at every, no one would be able to afford that.
Right.
Under the cap.
Right.
So that doesn't work. I think that Belichick is better at utilizing that mentality. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, if that makes any sense. I think he's a. You know, I was on the radio with Steve D'Arcy. You can blow the horn if you want, Jason. But Steve D'Arcy talked about how he's a modern-day football genius, was what he said about Belichick.
You're making my point.
I think that he understands so much more than the average guy. That puts, you know, let's say, for example, give me an example of a player that you think, Mike Vrabel, okay?
Right.
He's kind of the poster child.
Never was a starter at Pittsburgh.
Right, he's kind of the poster child for what the Patriots try to do, right? Versatile, cerebral, high motor kind of players. I'm not sure that if Mike Vrabel was somewhere else, he'd be as good.
I agree.
And I think Mike Vrabel is an outstanding talent, an outstanding athlete. But I don't know if Joe Smith coaching him would have had the wherewithal to put him at tight end.
Yeah.
I don't know if Joe Smith coaching him would have said, well, you rush the passer from the outside. We're in trouble, though. We're going to put you at inside linebacker. I'm not so sure that just anybody would have done that.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? That's where I think Belichick's. I think a lot of teams try to do what Belichick does, but I think Belichick is better at it than everybody else.
No, and you know, and Belichick learned from Parcells some things, and one of the
big show for you.
And one of the things Parcells said, and it's probably something that the better coaches all understand, is that as long as guys understand who they are in this league, they'll be fine. It's when they start to try to be things that they're not is when they run into trouble.
That's
now, there's
point.
Some great guys like Tom That's Brady and Curtis Martin and who can do whatever and they'll be great. But most of the guys fall into that category. And
the individual that we talked about extensively was Matt Chatham last year during training camp.
Yeah.
You know, if Matt Chatham was hell-bent on being a star outside linebacker in this league, and he was going to go until he found someone that would start him at outside linebacker, he wouldn't have done that with the Patriots.
Yeah.
Patriots would have said, good luck, Matt. We think, you know, we have a value of for you here. We want you here. But if you want more, I'm not so sure that we can give you more.
And I'll tell you that I think that Belichick revived Willie McGinnis' career.
Oh, clearly.
Because, you know, when Carroll was here, they tried to make Willie McGinnis this all-pro, you know, elephant. They used the name of the position, linebacker, where he would go and really exploit whatever the weakness of the other team was. And you know, and then it was really up to McGinnis to make plays. Well, his role changed when Belichick came. He's very he's confined to a certain thing that he's doing on every play. I mean, there's times where you look at McGinnis and say, well, why isn't he rushing the passer? What is he doing? Why is he just standing there? That's because that's what he's supposed to do. Yep. And a player who's not buying into that philosophy will say, you know what? There's a lane. I'm going for the passer. And meanwhile, he's leaving something
you want the example?
Wide open.
Chris Slade.
Exactly.
Chris Slade wanted to be, I'm a pass rusher.
Right.
You know,
every
that's
play,
what he wanted.
He just wanted to go upfield and rush the passer. And you know,
good player. Yeah. I mean, I'm not criticizing Chris Slade. He's a good, solid player here.
What you're going to do? You gotta be Dwight Freeney good.
Right.
You have to know.
Belichick doesn't want guys that only
right.
do one thing.
The coach has to know that if that's all you're going to do, you have to at least put pressure on the quarterback on every play, or else you're no good to me, or else you're just doing a dance.
And you know what's funny? Talking about the Parcells Belichick thing, Parcells basically thought the same thing about Chris Slade. Remember when he benched him?
Yeah. Yeah.
He thought, you know, look, all you're interested in is rushing the quarterback,
right, you're
and that's not really helping our defense.
I'm asking you to do something. You're not willing to do it, so you're no good to me.
You know?
You're no good to me.
And then, you know, with Pete Carroll, different system. He was a pass rusher.
Yeah.
Not saying that one was wrong or the other was right, but there are different systems. In Belichick's system, like you said, you have to be outstanding. You have to be Dwight Freeney good rushing the passer.
Yeah.
If that's all you're going to do.
Right. Right.
You know, I think Dwight Freeney would fit in fine with the Patriots.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people think, oh, all he does, that's fine.
That's,
if that's all you do, you have to get 16 plus a year.
Right.
In order to be,
absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
I think there are guys that can do that in Belichick's system, but, you know, 40 to 45 guys on Belichick's roster do more than that.
I mean, if you had Dwight Freeney, you'd go to a 4-3. Could you imagine Richard Seymour lining up next to Dwight Freeney? Oh, my God. Yeah. Now you probably couldn't afford a line.
Yeah, it's not the prototype guy. You know, right. Greg Spires was a guy like that. You know, Greg Spires, they didn't feel was big enough to play in the 3-4, and he probably isn't. But he had a fairly successful post-Patriots career in Tampa Bay.
Right.
Being a part of a very good defensive line with the Bucs, with Simeon Rice and Warren Sapp when he was there in his prime, and he was kind of an overlooked guy, Booger McFarland, and he rushes the passer fairly well.
Sure. I mean,
now, looking back, you know, might Belichick say, well, let's see if we could find some spot for him somewhere else. Maybe he would have.
Right.
But I don't think that his body type was necessarily what the Patriots, and I think Dwight Freeney would be similar, but find a way.
I mean, you know, that's the difference between football and a lot of, but all you have to do is look before 93. Okay, who were the teams that were great? Well, I mean, the Giants weren't always great. They had their good years, but Pittsburgh. Well, they're known for not paying big money. They've never paid big money to players.
Right.
You know, yet they were able to gather and keep a lot of great talent because of the success they had over a stretch of time. Now, San Francisco's on the other end. They actually, you know, went overboard and paid guys too much, and then, you know, it ended up hurting them
later on.
Well, they
cheated, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and they got caught, and, you know, DeBartolo got in trouble and all that.
But I think that there was a lot of parity even before. And the parity came not because of the salary cap. It became because of the sharing of revenue. That's where the, you know, they were sharing TV revenue. A long time before 93.
Well, that's what allowed teams like Green Bay to be competitive with teams like Dallas.
And that's what's important. It's not necessarily the salary cap, although the salary cap does help. But, you know.
No, you're right, Fred, because, like, even in the 70s, like, Pittsburgh won 4 out of 6 Super Bowls.
Right.
Right? But how many great, truly great teams were there that, you know, you had in the AFC, you had Miami was always great. You had Oakland was always
even
great.
Houston.
The Houston Oilers were great teams. They just couldn't get past Pittsburgh in the playoffs.
Right.
Then the NFC, you had Dallas was always great. You had Minnesota back in those days in the 70s was great. Yeah. I mean,
Minnesota, it's not in a market that's making a lot of money.
And they were great year after. They went to 4 Super Bowls in what, a span of what, 8 years?
Buffalo.
They lost them all.
How does Buffalo go to the playoffs 4 years in a row, the Super Bowl 4 years in a row? They're not in a market that makes a lot of money.
And I know a lot of people laugh. That's the punchline for a lot of teams. You know, Buffalo. That was a great team.
Absolutely.
They didn't win the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean they weren't great. You know, I mean, and you can sustain it. But the fact that the league is set up the way you said with the revenue sharing and all, and that's why this CBA stuff is so important, because I think that's what makes the league go.
I mean,
is the ability for every team to have a legitimate chance to win.
And you know, it's little things. Like, you take the Bengals, for example. The Bengals are notorious for not spending. Now, things changed a little bit. They started spending a little bit more money. But the key was bringing in a coach like Marvin Lewis, who comes in and just all of a sudden galvanizes the team, and they start coaching better, and the players start listening, and they start buying into it. That's what changed it. It wasn't all of a sudden the Bengals started spending a lot more money.
Right.
You know?
It was just that they became a franchise. He legitimized them. It was like Parcells when he came here with Robert
exactly.
Kraft coming in the next year.
Yeah.
You know, in 93 when Orthwein was still here, what had changed from 92? It was Orthwein. It was a dump of a stadium.
Right.
There was no talent. But Parcells came in, and he was a legitimizing figure. And they, how many season tickets they sold that first day?
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
And then they get the added bonus where Robert Kraft comes in and saves the team from having to move the following year in 94, and you've been sold out every game ever since.
Yeah. So, you know, all that stuff goes into football. That's why it's, you know, you can't say that, well, if there's no salary cap, then, you know, automatically certain teams will always be the best team. I don't think in football you can say that. And that's why there's some owners that are willing to take that chance if, you know, they feel that they're being unfairly treated.
If all the other stuff stays in place with the revenue sharing and whatnot, but you don't have a salary cap, I think it won't necessarily be baseball, but it'll be a good test for your theory.
It'll be interesting.
It'll be a good test for your theory.
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys like Daniel Snyder will certainly, you know, pay a lot of money for the players that he wants, but, you know, I guess if there's no collective bargaining agreement, does that mean there's no free agent? That's it, automatically everybody's a free agent? Or how does that work?
No, I think that they would have to. No, you have contracts.
Right.
So you'd still have free agency. When a guy's contract is up, he would become a free agent.
Yeah, but I'm talking about right now, you have to wait 4 years. Is automatically you're a free agent if you're in the league?
Maybe they would just probably set something up where you had to have 4 years or whatever. I mean, that's
under
like,
what agreement, though?
Well, you have to have some sort of CBA.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to have a salary cap. But you have, I mean, like, baseball doesn't have a salary cap, but they have free agency.
Right. Oh, okay.
I mean, you have a CBA. You have to have some kind of CBA. You have to have some agreement between the players
and
the owners.
That's what I'm thinking. I don't know what happens, though. I don't know. I don't know all the...
I mean, the salary cap would go away, but... The players' union wouldn't go away. I mean, they still would.
Upshaw even talked about that. He talked about disbanding the players' union so that the owners couldn't have a lockout. If there's no union, you can't have a lockout.
Yeah, well,
you know, so I don't know.
I don't really see. I mean, I've had a couple of questions lately. People ask me about the potential for a work stoppage. I don't really see that.
I just don't
see that as being a possibility.
I would be so upset if I was a fan, and I am. If the NFL did that, it would just be so stupid and so greedy. I mean, everyone's making money, you know?
You're right.
And you know, Tom, there was an Ask PFW that came about, you know, how, you know, the players make so much more money and they shouldn't, you know, and the owners make money, everyone's making money, don't worry about it. Tom wrote how he thinks that in football, you know, professional football players don't make as much as they should. I kind of disagree with that.
Well, I think there's an argument to be made for that.
Well, there's less games. You know, there's only 16 games as opposed to...
That's true.
And there's, you know, so... And there's less revenue at the gate because, of course, there's only 16 games. So, you know, all of that is relative. Yeah, it's a more violent sport. Yeah, they still train year-round. You know, but, you know, we work year-round, too. There's nothing wrong with working year-round.
No, but... I mean, you're basically putting more of a premium on games. You just answered the question. They're not working any less than the other teams.
No.
But they're making less.
Because their performance, they only have 16 performances a year.
Understood. But they're not working any less than a baseball player who has 162 performances a year. Fred, you know the answer to this. You know how much they're here in the off season. You know how much they're working out. You know how many mandatory mini camp, quote unquote, involuntary, voluntary
mini
camps.
Well, it depends on how much emphasis you put on the game itself. I mean, a lot of players will say, in baseball, the game's the easy part. You know, I love the game. You know, it's the practice that's really hard. I don't know in football if that's true.
No, the game is probably the hard part in football.
That's what I'm saying. But, and there's only 16 of them.
But you also have all of that other stuff that you have to do, the films and the meetings. And
sitting in a classroom.
I'm not saying
doing
look,
walkthroughs.
Look, it's
you know maybe one or two hard
think,
practices a week.
I don't think there's an argument to be made that it's not the I mean it's not the most difficult to do.
Yeah.
I mean physically demand. I mean you look at how many 40-year-old football players there are out there, ex football players that can't even walk. Never mind 60-year-old
sure.
ex-football
no,
players.
No, and that's a big part of it. Yeah.
So, in that regard, and they seem like they have by far the worst arrangement among the pro athletes, and I'm sure that you're right because they
don't
have guaranteed contracts.
Right.
And that's, I think, what the situation was. Now, I don't think necessarily the guaranteed contract is the fix-all for everything.
But what's a roster in baseball? 25?
Yeah.
And it's 53 in football. So as an owner, you have to pay that many more people, you know? So, I mean, a lot of this, you know, a lot of...
Make the argument that the owners in football make more than the other sports?
I think, for the most part, yeah, because of the revenue sharing.
Because of the revenue generated. I mean, if you have revenue, but if you have revenue sharing and you don't have anything to share, you're not making that much.
I understand.
You know, baseball has a version of revenue sharing, but it's not worth nearly as much as it is in football.
No, it isn't. But you know, I don't know. You know, the books in baseball. You know, some of these teams that are crying poor. I'm sure some don't do
look.
Well.
I don't think a lot of these guys are
when
taking
have,
a bath.
When
like
you have
they,
81
like they claim
games, you know, you should be making some money. I mean. You know?
Yeah, I'm not saying they don't make any money. I just don't think that you're going to see very many baseball owners, you know, in Forbes magazine as being worth more than $1 billion.
Right. Well, I mean,
the way you saw three.
But that's the thing about the NFL is it's, you know, each team is worth a certain level, you know, a low level, and even that level, like the emailer said, before you even go out in the field, you can pay your players because of just the TV
that's true.
That you're sharing.
That's true.
You know, and the owners need to realize that. I think they do, but they need to realize how great a thing they've got going. And the players, I think, need to do their part too. You know, don't screw this thing up.
Yeah, and I don't think this is one thing that's funny because it's so easy to target the players in these situations and lockouts and whatnot. I'm pleasantly surprised that this doesn't seem to have anything really to do with the players.
No,
any of this strike.
If anything, Upshaw's been criticized. Since he took over as, you know, executive director, that he's been too soft with the owners, that he's been in the pocket of Tagliabue.
And they want some added perks here. They want more of the revenues to be included in the DGR. I can never say that fast.
Yeah. Designated gross revenues.
Right. But it appears as if everybody among the owners is in agreement with that.
Yeah.
They're okay with that.
Well,
so it's not like the owners are, I mean, the players are really being greedy here and saying, no, we need guaranteed contracts, we need this, we need that. I think they understand that it's a good thing and everybody's getting a piece of the pie.
See, I think that the owners like Robert Kraft and Daniel Snyder and Jerry Jones would be saying, they would be fine with, let me think about this, if some of the unshared revenues were automatically put into the cap to increase the cap, they'd be okay with that because the money's going to players. What they don't like is putting it into the shared so that other owners have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't mind some of it going to the players. They don't want the owners that aren't making that much money getting it.
Right.
Because that takes away the advantage.
And the owners that don't make that much money are objecting because the cap is going to rise and we're not getting this money,
right.
And now my profit margin is going down.
Exactly.
So, to which I say, cry me a river. That's
right.
Why I agree with the big
right.
I agree with the Habs in this case.
There's got to be a way, and coaching is one thing, hiring good coaches, but there's got to be a way if you work hard in your area that becomes a competitive advantage for you. If you're willing to work hard and maximize profits in your area, market the hell out of your team, you know, sell out your stadium, you know, get a huge deal for local radio because the radio station knows that you're a great product and we want you on our radio station. That needs to be able to be a competitive advantage for a team.
We've been in pretty much every NFL stadium, Fred, with the Patriots, right? How many do we go in where we look around and we say, wow, there's just no fan support in this city? Not too many. Arizona was one that jumps right off the top of my head.
Right.
But I can't remember being in too many
Jacksonville, maybe.
Okay, I haven't been in that one. But I can't think of too many off the top of my head where I look around and I say, wow, they just get no support
right.
in this city.
Right.
So work and find, you have the support.
Right.
Find ways to generate revenue from that support.
Sure.
You know, the Buffalo Bills fans are rabid.
Yeah.
It's a small, tiny market, but when they're going well, they're as passionate as anybody. Find ways.
Well, and I'll play devil's advocate. You know, they would argue, well, that's great. We've got our fans, but so much of this extra revenue that these teams are making is from the corporate world, and we're in Buffalo. We just don't have these businesses that are willing to pay the money for a 300. You know, we could increase our stadium, but we wouldn't even be able to, sell the suites for what.
I'm skeptical of that. I'm very skeptical.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Could they make the same amount of money that Dallas will make on their suites? Probably not.
Right.
You know, even if they maximize their profits, they're probably not capable of making the same amount of money as the high end ones.
Right.
But you can make more money.
You can make more money, and maybe that's the answer. Is there's just a threshold that, you know, you look at the economies of all the teams and say, if you work hard, here's the bottom line you should be able to make. I'm not saying that everyone needs to make what the Giants or the Patriots make, but here's, you know, if you sell suites at this level or choose to have premium seats or whatever, you should be able to make this lower tier of money. And that's where the standard should be. And at that point, that money is shared. Anything above that, you get to keep. I don't know.
And I also agree with one of the statements that you made early when we started talking about this. This is probably going to get settled. If it doesn't get settled now, it's going to get settled soon, because a lot of these guys that are on the dissenting side, or they want, you know, the bigger piece of the puzzle,
right,
are the old school. It's the old.
They have no debt,
and they have, you know. But not only that, Fred, I just don't think. And look, I'm certainly not a business guy. I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about the business world. Okay, but I think that those guys, the Rooney family, Ralph Wilson, Lamar Hunt, Lamar Hunt is an innovative guy. I mean, he was ground floor with the Super Bowl and everything else.
Mike Brown.
You know, I don't think those guys are necessarily in touch with some of the new school ways of making money, like a Daniel Snyder or a Jerry Jones or even the Kraft family here with all the things that we've been first doing.
Right.
There are a lot of ways you can make money that aren't shared.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're part of that. I mean, some of the things they've done with us is part of that.
I just saw a recent poll that went around. It was sent around by some of the webmasters in the NFL just to see staff, you know, what other teams have for staffs. The guy from Pittsburgh, it's got one guy, Pittsburgh Steelers.
There's a webmaster and that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, and that's exactly.
You're trying to tell me that the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have a national audience?
Right.
You couldn't tap in. You couldn't have a Steelers weekly, Steelers in Progress?
Right. I mean,
and have a radio show that people all over the country. Pittsburgh has a rabid fan base across the country.
How can you say that the Steelers are actually looking at that website as a way to make extra money?
They're not.
If they only have one guy doing it, it's not fair.
But that's part of what I'm talking about. Is I think that once some new blood comes in and they understand, like, you know, some guy like Fred Kirsch comes in and buys the Pittsburgh Steelers and says, "Wait a minute, you're not utilizing your website to generate revenue?"
Right.
I mean, so someone like you or Trent, who does a lot of our web research and innovations here, that would be, you would laugh. I mean, it would be like elementary. You would just, you would be,
right.
You wouldn't even believe it if someone told you they weren't utilizing those kinds of avenues to try to generate revenue.
And you got to have people. I mean, it's
now, Ralph Wilson, do you think Ralph Wilson's in touch with how to make money on the internet?
No.
Of course not.
But, you know,
he's 110 years old.
He's got to be smart enough to hire people that do, and apparently he's not. You know, they don't need to do it. And so why do it?
That's my point in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Is if we just keep sharing everything, there's no incentive to make these guys get in touch with how to find out, how to maximize their local radio contracts, how to maximize their signage in the stadiums, how to maximize their luxury suites. That if you don't have to, you won't.
Yep.
You're making money anyway.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of PFW in Progress. We'll be back next Wednesday. Don't forget, check out Patriots.com tomorrow and throughout the weekend for updates from Tom and Andy. They're in Indy with the Combine. We'll see you Wednesday.